today talking with Steve Huff, a legendary South Florida guide, who also happened to be involved in many of the first changes that created what we now think of as a modern technical poling skiff. Welcome, Steve. Thanks for agreeing to talk to us.
Oh, no problem. Happy to help out if I can.
Now, I was speaking with Eugene Son at Chipoke Boats this morning, and he was telling me that you were actually involved in taking some of the early hulls that now are Chipoke hulls and turning them into fishing skiffs back in the 1960s or 70s. Is that right?
When I started guiding, which was in 68, I had a great big, I would call it a scow. It was like a 19-foot Mako hull. It was called a Purdue 18, but it was 19 feet long, and it was impossible to pole. It was like poling a battleship. So I looked for something. Plus, I didn't know what I was doing with it when I got there most of the time back then. So I started looking around, and I bought the first used Bonefisher, actually, and it had the first one I saw was actually, I think Bob Stearns had it, but he wasn't guiding, and it was the first one that was used guiding. I bought it, and I brought it down to the Keys. It had a forward steering wheel and a front console on the side, and it was laid out poorly, but again, I didn't know a lot about how skiff layouts were supposed to be. So getting to the Chipoke thing, so I decided I needed another boat, and I went a guy by the name of Wally Cole. Is this all right, Marshall? Am I going into this all right here? But,
absolutely. I was going to ask you about the Hughes skiff.
Well, the Hughes actually...
That boat wasn't originally intended to be a flat skiff, or was it?
It was a runabout, that boat, the Hughes. And Bob Hughes bought the hull, or the rights to the hull, as I understand it. He bought the mold, and he decided to build a skiff at the urging, I think, of Bill Curtis, who invented the poling platform. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but he was the sole force behind the poling platform, because people were standing on top of their motors prior to that. And I think at Bill Curtis's urging and Bob Stearns, anyhow, they started making the Hughes. They made it into a skiff design, designed a cap for front deck and a back deck on the Hughes. And I bought one to fish, but the ones I had seen previously had a center console, but the one I bought had a front console on the side, and it was not the right place to be in the boat, but I bought that boat in 1970, and then I started looking around for another boat. A guy by the name of Wally Cole had taken a race boat and made it into a skiff, and that was, and he built a boat for Guy Valden, that's the boat that's featured in the movie Tarpon, and he built, I think, four or five skiffs out of that ski boat design, and a friend of mine, Lenny Berg, wanted one, and he contacted Wally Cole and said there was no way they were going to make any more. So then I got in my car one day, I drove up to Miami and started looking at hulls, every kind of ski boat hull, and I wound up buying a brand new Sidewinder ski boat with metal flake top and leather seats and a windshield, and I drug it down to the Keys. I took a saber saw and I sawed it apart, sawed the top off, threw the leather chairs out, and turned it into a skiff. And ultimately,
where were you doing that? In my front yard.
In my front yard, I'm at the Keys. I lived out behind the airport in Marathon there, so I didn't have any workspace. I had a carport, but most of the fiberglassing and stuff I just did out in the yard. But I built it up. The decks were plywood, and the hatch covers weren't guttered or anything. I mean, it was just pretty crude, but it was an unbelievably good riding boat. The downside to it was it had a reverse chine, or the chine line slanted down and it cupped water. So if you're pulling into the wind, it was tragically noisy. But I won several bonefish tournaments in Isla Mirada pulling that boat around in shallow water. So, it was a dream ride of a boat. And I took Fred Archibald, who started Shipoke. I was in Home Assassin in 1976, I think. I took him for a ride there, and he said, "I'm going to produce this boat." So he actually popped a hull off of a Sidewinder ski boat and started making skiffs. That was the start of the Shipoke. And then,
now those hulls were being made in California, or they were
Anderson, California was where Sidewinder was located, but they must have had some the whole bunch of guys. First boat I built was a fiberglass hull, but they had transferred the making of that boat to somewhere in Canada, and they were making them out of Kevlar, solid Kevlar. So they, Billy Pate, who else? Nat Raglan, Mike Eula, Danny Moret, a bunch of guys got together, and they ordered a boatload of Sidewinder hulls, and they had them built up by custom builders down in the Keys, because Sidewinder never did make a fishing skiff. All they made was a race boat, runabout ski boat type thing. So that boatload of boats, they all had them built up, and consequently the popularity of that boat grew. It also had its downside. Like every boat is a compromise, and it was a bear to fish for bonefish out of, and that reverse chine, you actually had to approach every fish from downwind. Even if you were on the upwind side, you had to pull all the way around the thing and come down at them, which was pretty tiring after a while.
Now, I remember speaking to Bob Montgomery, who was one of the first guides that I fished with back when I was practically a teenager down there, and he told me that one of the reasons, or the main reason, he had decided to use a Sidewinder hull for his custom skiffs was that it just enabled him to do a whole lot more. You know, he could travel to places they had never thought about going to the Marquesas, he said.
Yeah, right. No, that was such a great riding boat. It was incredible. It still is. In fact, here's a crazy story if you ever heard one. My son, Dustin, who is a fishing guide in the Keys today, well, when all those guys bought those sites, Bob Montgomery was another one that bought one when all that boatload of hulls came down. Anyhow, they gave me a hull for starting that whole thing. Whoever made the deal, and I think it was Nat Raglan, made the deal. They decided, as a reward for my participating in the thing, they gave me a hull. Well, I didn't have time to build a skiff up out of it. But Nat Raglan and Mike Hewlett had built a mold, actually, to fit on top of it. So I went over and laid up a deck mold and hatch covers one time. This is kind of a long story, but an interesting story. But I didn't have time to finish it. So Bob Montgomery actually built it up. A guy that I was fishing, Tom Richardson, bought all the parts from me, took it to Bob Montgomery. Bob Montgomery built it up and did a spectacular job on it. And then Tom Richardson used it for a while, and then he moved away from the Keys. He sold it to my wife's father, actually, and Dustin was are you interested in this at all? I mean, am I
absolutely
rattling on?
This absolutely
is kind of cute. Anyhow, my son Dustin was in love with that boat from the very first time he ever saw it. And it came up for sale because Tom Richardson wanted to sell it, but Dustin had no money. So my father-in-law bought it. He got sick, and it was sold to a guy in Ohio who took it to Ohio and used it as a ski boat. And Dustin was the broker for the boat each time. So every time he broke it, everybody said, you know, if you can sell this boat for me, I'll give you $1,000. So he gave him $1,000 and he sold the boat. He actually sold it to my father-in-law one, and then to the guy that was fishing with me in Ohio too. So these are people I knew, but each time it came up for sale, Dustin was like lusting after it, but I had no money. So So then the guy in Ohio called Dustin and said, I want to get rid of this boat. My wife doesn't like it because it doesn't have leather seats. So Dustin, again, didn't have the money, but he found somebody down in the Keys who bought it, and it was gone forever, he thought. And one day he was looking in the boat trader. And nobody really knew that that boat was solid Kevlar, how it was built or anything else. And it was in the thing for like $5,000 or $6,000. So Dustin offered the guy a low money, and Dustin has that boat today. And he rebuilt it, and it's a spectacular boat. So he finally wound up with the boat of his dreams. But he doesn't guide out of it. He just uses a second boat to take his family out and stuff.
Wasn't Kevlar, I mean, wasn't that a lot more challenging to work with than fiberglass?
Kevlar is, I've worked with Kevlar. Kevlar is actually the real plus of Kevlar. The advantages of Kevlar are just impact resistance mainly. And it's not really essentially that much lighter. In fact, often it winds up heavier because the difference is when you resin out fiberglass, it becomes transparent, and you can see through it, and you know it's wet. You also can see an air pocket or a void behind it and work it out, you know, with some tools, get the air out of it. But Kevlar remains opaque, and it goes from a gold color to a rust color once it's wet. But sometimes it's pretty hard to tell if it's wet, and also it's hard to tell if there's air underneath it. So you have to continually work with it more. So it's the advantages really are just impact resistance. In fact, if you built a boat out of Kevlar, if you just had the outer skin was Kevlar and the rest of the boat was fiberglass, you're just as well off as having the entire thing be Kevlar, probably.
Gotcha.
You know?
Well, let's get back to the skiff history part. You fished out of a shy boat for a number of years, and then
a number of years, yeah. And then I wanted to have a smaller boat, so I was going to have two boats for bone fishing, and I bought there was a guy by the name of Dave, actually, who was making a little runabout type of a boat, and he called it the Super Skiff, and it had like a console in it, I mean, not like a center console, a windshield, and I borrowed the boat from Dickie Moeller up in Isle of Maraude. He had one. He was bone fishing out of it, and he thought it was a great little boat for bone fishing, even though it wasn't a skiff layout. And we borrowed it. Myself and another guide went out, and Al Polofsky, actually, who's a guide in Isle of Maraude even today, and Al Polofsky and I went out and pulled each other around. We both thought it was really a neat boat, especially if it had been laid out as a skiff thing. So I talked to the fellow who was making the boats at the time, Jack Broyle, owned the company. And I went up there and had him build me a hull and brought it home and built another boat in my yard or finished, put a cap on it and a floor in it. And that was the first super skiff that was actually laid out for skiff fishing.
And that boat originally started out just as you say, a runabout or a canal boat or whatever. And
right.
And the story I heard was that they had taken some of those flat-bottom skiffs over to Deepwater K Club in the Bahamas, and the clients were just couldn't stand the ride out to their permit fishing spots.
Right,
flat-bottom boat. So they stuck that V on the bottom and made it into, I guess, the boat it is today. And
the classic and, boat it is today.
The classic, but you could probably tell the story about how it ended up being the quietest boat. Maybe still one of the quietest boats.
It's the quietest boat because at rest, the secret to that boat, what makes that boat so effective, is at rest, if the boat is level, and it's very important to keep the weight in the boat level, but at rest, the entire chine, which the chine is flat, which makes the boat dry, but it doesn't rise up at the bow. Consequently, when the boat's at rest, the entire chine is submerged, and the boat is quiet, so there's no flat surfaces for the water to slap underneath. That's the secret to that boat. That's what makes that boat so popular and so effective.
But at that time, there weren't were guides poling into the wind, or was that even?
Oh yeah, no. I think there's always been somebody that was poling into the wind. I was fishing in a tournament one time, and the Maverick Boat Company It's kind of an interesting story because Lenny Berg, an angler of mine, and the one that wanted to have Wally Cole build him up a boat, eventually talked Wally Cole into selling him the molds. Lenny Berg is an eye doctor, an eye surgeon, and so he bought the molds and started, and then he and a friend of his, Flip Pallet, got involved in designing a cap for it and kind of altering the hull a little bit, not too much because it was a good riding boat the way it was, and so they Lenny Berg started the Maverick Boat Company. And
now, which hull was that?
Huh? Which hull?
Yes.
It was a ski boat hull. I'm trying to think of the name of the hull before it was named Maverick, but it was a ski boat hull that I think Wally Cole, the fellow Wally Cole, who was a boat builder in Coconut Grove, South Miami, he is something that he built and designed. He built the mold for it. It was like a race boat, and he altered the mold a little bit and started, and he built, like, I think he built five or six skiffs, not very many. Guy Valdin had one, and that's probably the most, you know, obvious one, and some of the features that film he did, and et cetera, and so on. But they were all identical to that, and that was really the first Maverick, but it wasn't called a Maverick at the time because it wasn't the name of the boat. The name came from Lenny Berg, who started the Maverick Boat Company. And I'm trying to think of the guy that owns it today. You know his name.
Scott Deal?
Scott, yeah. Scott bought it from him. And then I was fishing in a bonefish tournament one time in the super skiff, and the Maverick at the time was an 18- or 19-foot boat that they were making. And Scott Deal had bought the molds from Lenny Berg. Lenny Berg, his accountant told him that it was costing him $1,000 every time he sold a boat, so he decided he was a better eye doctor than managing a boat company. So he got out of that business, and the mold sat idle for several years, and then Scott Deal contacted him and wanted to buy the molds, and he sold the molds to Scott Deal. And then I was in a tournament. I was getting back to this tournament. I was in a bonefish tournament, and we came in from fishing one afternoon. Scott Deal was fishing in the tournament, and he said, I'd like to go for a ride in that boat. And that was the super skiff, you know. I said, sure, I'll give you a ride. So we rode around one afternoon. It was pretty choppy, and he was pretty impressed with the ride. He says, I'm going to copy this boat. And that was where the HPX and all those boats came from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, he copied the super skiff. He altered it, obviously. And in his mind, he made it better.
Mm-hmm.
But
Where do you think that leaves? What's your view of the state of the art today? Or obviously,
I have to tell you, Marshall, there's so many people building boats now. There's lots of skiffs. Every skiff is a compromise, and there's a lot more people around, more suited to answer that question than I am, because there's so many. I'm sure there's lots of good boats out there that I've never been in. You know. I mean, I'm just fishing all the time, and I have the boats that I have. So, I mean, some of these boats, I haven't, you know, I went out. Scott Deal, when he built that first HPX or Little Maverick, he brought it down, and, you know, he said, what do you think? I said, well, it's good. It's probably almost as good as a super skiff, and he didn't like hearing that. But, but I'm sure he's improved it. It's probably a great boat today. Hell's Bay. Interestingly, there's not that many skiffs. Well, until 15 years ago, there was not many hulls that were originally started out to be a poling skiff. In other words, they were designed to be a runabout, a ski boat, various other things, but with the exception of Willie Roberts making wood boats in the Keys just for flats fishing, nobody was doing it. They were just altering hulls like I did with the Sidewinder to try to make something that rode pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it got into that Well, the Superskiff wasn't really designed as Flats boat either. But I think Hell's Bay makes a great boat. They make a lot of different models, and they're excellent boats. And Hal Chittum makes an incredibly good boat. You know, I mean, it's... And there's lots of other boats out there. Honest to God, somebody brought me a brochure recently of something called a Skull Island. There's a...
I'm trying to think of another one.
There's another one, East Cape. Yeah. You're to East Cape. I think they probably make a great little boat. Every time somebody comes up with something really good, some other people copy it almost, you know, or alter it slightly or something. But the options today for great boats are way out of my realm of reason. I couldn't begin to even take the time to get in all of them and critique them. A friend of mine stopped by here yesterday, Harry Spear, and he's building a great little boat. He's building custom building boats and up by Tallahassee, and he had a boat yesterday here that he said, well, we didn't get a chance to get out in it because I had to leave, but he does great work and builds a light boat, and they're all out of epoxy resin. So
it's a wonderful thing about the whole culture of skiff building. It seems like anybody who's ever spent time driving a skiff around, or poling, especially poling a skiff around, it just seems to get in their blood, and they're just, you know, like Harry, certainly one of the top guides in the Keys for a long time.
There's probably nobody more qualified to build a poling boat than Harry, but he understands what makes it work, you know.
Absolutely. Well, I'll ask you one more sort of general question, and that has to do with what you actually would look for in a skiff today, knowing what you know about what's
right.
out there.
What makes a boat quiet is that there's no flat surfaces where there's going to be any wave action on the boat. So I would look for a boat that if the chine or the edge of the boat rose out of the water, it would have to have a big radius on it to allow the water to release around it without any slapping, because you don't want any hull slap whatsoever. And I would like a boat, and today I think it's quite possible to fish in 8 inches or 8 or 10 inches of water that would pull that in that depth. And then I'd like something with somewhat of a V forward. I would never own a boat without trim tabs on it, because you can make it do what you want to do. I would be very careful. I'd look at the bottom of the hull near the transom and be sure that the boat had no hook in it. And you probably know what hook is, but if when they pull a boat out of a mole sometimes, if they pull it out prematurely before it's totally cured, you get some curvature in the hull, so it kind of rises up and comes down to the transom. And that acts as a force that keeps the bow down all the time.
Essentially gives you less control over what the boat is doing, right?
That's correct. Because you can make the bow go down with trim tabs, but you want to be able to make the bow go up. And if the hull has hook in it, you can't get the bow up. And if you're running on a following sea and it's rough as a cob, you know, that thing's going to want to bury on you, and you've got no way to get it up. So to me, I'd look for no hook and maybe a little rocker, which is a reverse hook, but at least dead flat to a little rocker. And then I'd look for
how would you describe a rocker?
Rocker is it's just the boat comes flat or slightly curves up to the transom. The actual, if you put a straight edge on the bottom of the boat, a 4 foot straight edge, you know, on the bottom of a boat going towards the transom, you don't want any airspace between that. If nothing else, it's flat, or else you can maybe rock the straight edge on the bottom of the boat. That's why it would be called rocker. You understand what I mean by that?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. So
not sure everybody would get that though. But so thank you.
Right. But also a V that you could, you know, put the bow down if you're running into a chop, and put the bow down with trim tabs, and you know, smooth out the ride. But and also personally, I think that the width of a boat, the more water you have to, when you're poling a boat, the more water you have to move out of the way, the harder it is to make it go. I'm 66 years old, and I don't like to have to move a lot of water anymore. And also,
one of the ironies, I think, of modern skip design has been as boats have gotten lighter, I think some of the designs have, I don't know if they're compensating for the lightness or trying to just create more stability, they've gotten wider, and some of the lighter boats that you pull around are actually harder to pull than a heavier boat.
I think a hull can be too light. But I'd go for narrow, and I'd go for no more than 16 feet, because in pulling a skiff, it's great if all the fish are just straight downwind and right in front of you, but that doesn't happen. And if you I want a boat that has what I call nimbleness or dexterity. I mean, you can be pulling this way and see a fish way over and turn the boat and take off in a new direction. And spinning a boat and getting it going in another direction to me is a huge deal. And that's a function of length, you know, and width. And if you have something that's somewhat narrow and not too long, because every time you add a foot of water, that's just more water you have to carve around in to get over there to a fish. And so I think 16 feet is the biggest skiff that I it is the biggest skiff that I own today. But that would definitely be part of it. And every time you make a boat narrower, it's going to be less stable. That's just a given. But if you spend time in a skiff, you get used to compensating for it. You just stay in the center of the boat. Don't hop around too much, you know.
And that does also translate sometimes into wetness and
well,
spray and too, right?
Narrowness, actually. I have two four boats, but too many boats. But I have two Hell's Bay boats, a 14-footer, which is 4 feet wide at the chine, 48 inches, and I have a 16-footer, which is significantly wider. I don't know. I haven't measured that one, but the narrower boat is much smoother ride. I mean, it's just a less flat surface that you're pounding on. There's no question it's a smoother ride.
So beam and weight don't always translate into how dry a boat rides.
Right. No, that's the flare of the hull, you know, how it delivers the water away from the hull. And how where the water breaks off the hull, if it breaks way forward, you know, if it breaks where you're standing, if you got a center console or you're sitting on the front edge of a back deck and it's breaking even with you, it's probably going to, even if it does spray up in there, it's going to blow over behind you, you know.
Sure.
If the water's breaking off the hull forward, you're going to get drowned, you know.
Yeah. Well, Steve, talking to you is always a lesson in history, and has given me tons to think about, and appreciate your spending the time talking to us about skiffs, and I hope we can follow up another day on another topic.
Well, I'm around. I'm actually working on my garage right now, fixing a boat trailer, so that's always a project, but I'm always willing to talk, Marshall. You have a great website, and it's a terrific source for so many people. It's great.
Well, thanks so much, Steve.